Hello and welcome to the Heads and Volleys podcast with me, Lee Dunn.
This episode is going to explore the idea of player power, and not necessarily the player power that you might read in the newspaper where the players get a manager fired, but actually more about player empowerment and really giving these players the opportunity to lead their own way, to challenge themselves, to be able to have an opinion and have a voice on what they think or what they want to see, or even just using that opportunity as a coach to understand what the players know. So my focus really is going to be with youth in this regard, and I don't think that you can really disregard it for any level of play, but it's basically around the experience that I have with working with preteens and teens right now too, at 14, 15 years old. And a lot of this will come from my own experience, and it's broken into two parts. Number one will be the idea of players within a team and fostering a team environment and then empowering players within that. And then the second will be about the one-on-one coaching. And I think a lot of one-on-one coaching has come about, especially since COVID and lockdown and isolated practices coming about too. So really my experience on working one-on-one, and I've done it for a long time with a variety of children, but really how I set up these players to empower them and to give them some power. So part one of this episode is about player empowerment and player power within a team. And if you coach competitive youth soccer or even recreational youth soccer too, you typically end up with a group of players that maybe don't know each other from outside of soccer. They probably don't go to school together, or you may have a couple that go to school. And so you're now challenged with not only creating and fostering a team environment that will perform, but also actually working on team cohesion, team bonding. And I've talked a little bit before about kind of events that you can do for team building and things like bowling and all sorts of good stuff that probably there's a lot of experience with. But really talking about what it means as a team and then an individual within the team. And a lot of this has come from experience in having a real tough time with an individual or an individual's family, especially, that then snowballs. And then before you know it, you've got a divide in the team, or you've got an isolated individual. And all of this can happen real quick if you're training three or four times a week and you're playing one or two, or maybe three games, or even a tournament over a weekend. Then suddenly over the case of, or over the course of 7 days, suddenly you've lost, or you've split the team in half, and without ever really being able to get a grip of it. So when lockdown happened, we were, of course, forced to Zoom calls just like everybody else, and kind of made a conscious decision to not really go with the everybody with a ball, juggle 10 times, pass against a wall, and let me watch approach, but actually developing on some of the things that we started working on over the last 2 years of working with these players and setting them up for what I basically called what we're happy to do and what we're not happy to do. And this came from a previous experience with this team within the same club where we had a game or a situation with a game where it just doesn't go your way. You probably know that game where you find yourself, maybe you missed something, maybe you just got blown out and it was a 12-0 loss, or maybe you tied or you won or you couldn't have won and it was difficult. You just know those games where it's tough. People are frustrated. You leave frustrated. Now, think about, as a coach, if you have an individual or if there's a moment within the game that you know somebody has made a mistake, or there's a reason, you can truly identify the reason, then, and it's not a referee or it's not the other coach being a clown, it's someone on your team. For example, a defender gives the ball away in front of their own goal and then the opponent scores and you lose 1-0. Now, as a coach, you don't, or hopefully within youth soccer, because again, this is referencing more youth soccer, you don't call that kid out necessarily. You don't berate them. You don't blame them in regards to you, it's all your fault. If we're developing players, then we don't really do that. But we find another way to work with that individual. We find a way to work within the team collectively that's not only going to boost that individual, but also to provide support to that individual. And again, not just blaming them. But you know, and unfortunately, it's rarely the best player who makes that sort of mistake. And typically, the parents may know that that player or their player is the best, or their player is better than the player who made the mistake. And unfortunately, and typically in the car ride home, that parent will definitely be talking about what the mistake was, who the mistake was made by, and how on earth did she miss that, or what was he thinking right there? And then it may also turn to the coach. Why would the coach let that player play in that moment, or why would this, or why would that? So then that becomes a conversation that these players experience within the game. Then you come to training the next day or another game that afternoon on the next day, because don't forget we're in the USA where it's great to play 4 or 5 games over a weekend in a tournament to say that you are the champions when actually you're probably just the fittest and survived it. But now they come to that next team environment and suddenly this player's opinion and perspective of maybe you, the coach, or but definitely the player who made the mistake has changed a little bit. Maybe they were friends, maybe they were just acquaintances, perhaps they just got on because they played on the same team. But now suddenly this kid is a liability. They made a mistake that was detrimental to the team and to the performance. So the last conversation that they had with their parent is something that they're going to remember. Oh yeah, that's right, that kid's a liability. Oh yeah, that kid, you know, she made a terrible mistake. Why on earth is she on this team? And then that carries into the conversation with their core friends. And this is what I meant by the idea of a divide coming. Perhaps there is a division amongst the team. Perhaps there is also just an isolation of that player because they made the mistake and they've been completely left behind by the rest of the team. So knowing that that has happened to me several times and I fought to get it back. And then I've also lost the team or lost the environment based on this division growing and growing and leading to players fighting even. Now I decided that I didn't want that to happen, or at least I wanted to, of course I didn't want it to happen, but I want to give myself the best opportunity and the team the best opportunity to not have that happen to us. So we created what we called kind of a will and will not conversation list. And I recently shared it on my Instagram, at Lee Dunn Soccer. You can check it on there. And it was all attributed to the car ride home, because as we know, as coaches and as parents, that's where players are going to get hammered all the time. That's where you sit and you're driven for 2 hours, you've got nothing to do but to talk about the game. If it was a good game, you guys won, then it's going to be a positive conversation. And if you lost, a lot of the time, you just can't help but identify the conversation as negative. And you go into it with the best of intentions, and suddenly before you know it, now we're going downhill and we're talking about blaming players, or we're talking about why. Now, back to the Zoom calls during isolation and quarantine, we had a Zoom call, and the question that I posed to the players was, what do you tell your parents when they ask you, how was training or how was the game? And you probably know the answer. The answer is good or okay. Yeah, it was fun. But they never really get told much more. So a parent just knows that the kid had a good time. Because if they didn't have a good time, they'd probably say, nah, it wasn't great. But that's all they really get. And then as a coach, do you then tell all of the parents what you've done every week or what you've been working on? And I know that I have, and then I also have not. Whether I've run out of time or it's just been the back of my mind and I've just never really got round to sharing more and more and more, and especially the intricacies of what we're working on in practice. Everybody understands the general model, the general direction of the team and the general philosophy, but they don't really get told the ins and outs of what we're working on kind of session to session or what a focus for a game may be in a particular moment. Now, so my challenge to the players has been for them to be that voice. Here is what we worked on. So when they get in the car and parents say, how was the game? How was practice? They're not allowed to say good. Well, they can say good, but they've got to build on that. And the reason they can build on that is it goes to the second task that we had. So I gave them an example of what we did in practice. And then I said, okay, now explain what we did to your parents. Tell me, as if I were your parent, what we did. And it was just a fun little exercise in empowering them to say, this is what we worked on. This is what I think we worked on. This is what I understood from the session. So it's actually kind of a cool little idea for me to be able to grasp what they understand, maybe what they don't understand. But then that conversation then sets them up to be able to have this structure of what they are happy and what they are not happy to talk about. And I'll start with not happy. So they said that they didn't want to talk about mistakes, and particularly impact mistakes. We all know if we pass the ball away in front of our own goal and somebody steals it and they score, we all know exactly who that was. And I know, I definitely know if it was me. I don't need somebody to point that out to me. And these players were exactly the same. So these are 13, 14, 15 year old boys. They don't want to talk about a loss. They don't want to talk about missed opportunities or decisions in isolated moments. And interestingly, they also said that they don't want to talk about the opponent, the referees, or the field, which I think is really empowering because those are typically things that will be used as a scapegoat, as something that are, or something that is really something we can put out there and say, it's not really our fault. And you'll hear the typical explanation that say, you know, oh, that other team didn't play very well today. They got lucky. Or that referee gave the game away. What a decision he made. And referee's probably 16 or 17 years old. But we isolated these will nots into a list of basically negatives. It's possibly a loss. And these are things that they can't necessarily control, or these are isolated moments in a game. And I was really happy to understand this from the players, that they do actually understand what we're trying to work on. They do understand how we're trying to play within our model or within the moments of the game. But what they didn't want to talk about was the isolated mistakes, which says to me that the parents will pick up, and anybody who has the best of intentions really identifies that was a clear mistake. That was clearly something that affected the game. We're in this game because we want to win, because we want to be better. So therefore, we're going to talk about those moments. And you talk about most analysis on pretty much any sport. It's pretty much focused on the moments. The overall trends are often missed. So then we turn the conversation into what we're happy to talk about. Now, as a general performance, the players are happy to talk about their general performance, whether it's good or bad. They're also happy to talk about what they did well and what they didn't do so well as a team. They're happy to talk about their effort. Now, their effort went with their comparison with other games. I feel like today I was better, worse, tired, etc., etc., in comparison to previous games, or I felt better. And now we're looking at the big picture here. It's not just week-to-week performances, but we're actually looking at a general trend of how this player is doing. And actually, if a player can tell you over several times that they feel like they're getting better and better, regardless of the overall results, the level of soccer that I was working in tells me that we're showing some improvement, or maybe we need to focus a little bit more on that individual if they're not doing as well, or their week to week is getting worse and worse. They're talking about their positioning. So now they're saying, I could have been better in this position, I could have been out here, and relate that to connecting practice to the game, which goes to that conversation of not just saying practice was good, but here's what we did in practice, and then here is what we were trying to do in the game. So we were working on attacking through the wings. As a game review, what the players are happy to talk about is how much success they actually had with getting the ball down the wings. We're not pointing on individuals. We're talking about a team. We're talking about them as an individual within the team, how they help the team work through that. Now, it's an interesting conversation if this is a center back driving with their parents and the focus was to score from crosses, for example. Now, a center back's probably not really all that involved, but they can see and they can understand what we've been working on and what we're working towards. Now, this is a real conversation with the parents that says, yeah, we did okay, or we didn't do very well, and maybe we can identify why. Perhaps they matched us up on the wings and we were unable to get the ball wide successfully, or whatever the issues may be. But now we're having a structured conversation. Instead of saying that player in the middle kept giving the ball away and that's why they scored 4 goals on us, now we're looking at the other side of the ball. And the reason, again, is because this negative leads down to division. It leads down to players having this separation issue where they listen to their parents or they listen to somebody else, and the division and the disparity between the players continues to grow. We look at decision making and then learning from teammates or helping teammates. So then instead of saying she kept giving the ball away in the middle of the field, the conversation moves into, as a team or as an individual, I can help this way. I should be doing this thing. And it's about team in that regard again, team. communication is a constant. I think it's a buzzword that youth players use. You know, how could we do better here? What could this be better? What could improve here? And communication is a real good buzzword. And the players, of course, say that they want to include communication. And then it's really building on that within the team context of what does communication look like for us? What is it? How is it helping us? How is it hindering us? Then take away from your own performance and the idea of, you could take this in a multiple different ways, but you look at things like a positive sandwich. You have a positive takeaway, a negative takeaway, and another positive takeaway. You could do, you know, two of each, three of each, whatever the players are comfortable with. I want to empower them to say, this is what I want to take away from this conversation, or this is what I want to talk about. But then having control of that too. And I think about this in regards to even controlling a halftime team talk where a coach may get carried away and they say, and another thing, oh, and another thing, oh, and you stop this, and you stop that, oh, and don't, and then suddenly it's information overload, 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 overload. And all of these players have an iPhone. So as soon as their parents start ranting, they're going to pick up their phone and they're going to switch them out. So now let's keep control of this conversation and let the players lead it, and they will identify their takeaways, whether it's positives, whether it's negatives. We talked about highlight reels too. These kids love Instagram, and we film the games, or we used to film the games. So then they talk about moments in the game that they want to get the film from so they can put it on their Instagram, so they can start building their college application resumes or their highlight reels, so they can say, here was me at 12 years old, here was me at 13 years old, here was me at 14 year old. Now we're seeing not only their highlights and they get to show off a little bit, but then we're building something for the long term, and it helps parents understand that the video of them as a 12-year-old is really important, not only for them to enjoy it and for them to get their highlight reel, but it shows progression and it shows this player's commitment to the game. And then we talk about how they think the game went, but then also what are they going to eat afterwards? Because the game's over, we're going to move on. I coached 6- and 7-year-olds last year, this time last year, and regardless of the result, the conversation was what ice cream are we going to have, or what are our after-game snacks? So wrapping it all up, the conversation was really about the positives. Of course, they want to talk about the positives. They're happy to talk if they win, but then really identifying the trends and tying practice into the game. So the players understood by the end of all this that it was really on them to structure the conversation with their parents. We're talking about empowering them. The parents were told this information as well. They were shared all of this information too. And the idea is that you ever ask them, what do you want for your player? And the common answer was for them to love the game, maybe for them to go far in the game, but for them to be lifelong lovers of the game. And for me to then say, this is what your children are happy to talk to you about. And I want you to respect that. And I want you to challenge them. And of course, they love their children. They want the best for their children. So this was a way of preempting the coming year and saying, this is going to be the structure of conversation. Now, the player wants to talk in a different way, or they want to talk about something else, then that's totally fine too, of course. The kids, they're going to want to talk about whatever they, or not talk at all. But really helping them see that talking negatively about another player or about the team in general is not going to help the team in the long run. We deal with that in practice and in games. It's going to help us move forwards collectively. But as an individual sat in the car with their parents, it's not a super positive moment when they start identifying her or him and the mistakes that they made or how they let the team down because of that negative snowball effect. Now switching gears into the idea of one-on-one training and empowering players in that environment too. Now, you typically find that you'll work with players, or players will be in contact with you to work with them individually and privately, because A, their parents want them to, of course. It's a no-brainer. The parents are, they want the best for their kid all the time, and they want their kid to have the best opportunities, and it's totally understandable. And private coaching is definitely a strong thing here in the USA. It's something that I've experienced and that I've done a lot of. And I actually have learned a lot of what I've done in terms of the team environment and then working a lot with individuals. And what I mean by that is whether I work with a child privately or whether I work with them in a team, they a lot of my focus is still individual. And so when I run a practice, I will often use a small-sided game of some format. It's often communicated prior to practice, so they know exactly what to expect. This is the way the game will look. I use Tactical Pad for that, and I always talk about how great Tactical Pad is. And then the players will understand, as an individual, what is expected of them. All of the players within the teams that I coach will have a positional profile, and they'll have an individual development plan. These are things that I talk about all the time, but the positional profile and the individual development plan give them their why. They identify their own why, but they use that within the context of the greater team training. We're playing a 4v4 to wide goals with the setup as a attacking diamond with a 9, 10, a 7, and an 11. I, as the 11, understand the game because I've seen the game in a practice, and it's definitely never really all that different from what we would do week over week with just maybe a different setup of goals or different field dimension. And I also understand what my role within that game will be. So then the same happens when I work one-on-one with a player. They will have their positional profile. They will have their individual development plan. So you see that a training environment, whether it's an individual or whether it's a team, never wavers from the focus of it being on the player. Never wavers from the focus being on them and their development. Except when I work one-on-one, I add another level to it, which is really about creating the excitement for them to take what they're working on right now and take that into their next team training environment or into their next game or even into their next training session with me, if it's been like right now where we haven't really been able to get on the field collectively as a team. So then they have their positional profiles, they have their IDPs, they have identified their why. They've identified their why for why they're training right now. Aside from the fact that their parents decided it would be good for them to get them out of the house, it's really about why. Do you want to be a professional soccer player? Most players will tell you yes, or most players will say that they want to go to college and play soccer. So then I use the IDP to help them understand maybe what it takes just to get to the next level before we even consider that final pillar of making it to the professional game. What we need to take from being 12 years old to 13 years old. What we need to take to go and play in high school and make maybe varsity from junior varsity. So really helping them understand why that just coming onto the field with me for an hour or for 90 minutes isn't going to make them a professional. It's definitely not. I wish it would. I wish I could put my hat on that. But we all know that it's going to take hours and hours and lots of repetition and lots of exposure to different ways of playing the game and different opportunities for these players to have success or continued success. So with me, it's just a stepping stone. Now, we might warm up and play soccer tennis. Why are we playing soccer tennis? Well, part of the conversation with the player is about why it might be valuable for them to play. Aside from the fact that it's just great fun and they always want to beat me because the loser has to do 2 one-handed push-ups, now we've got competition, because competition is sometimes missing in isolated training. You've probably seen hundreds of videos on Instagram, and I do my own on Instagram and YouTube too, where I do a highlight reel for the player on their session, and I use it for my own branding, of course, too. But for them, it's really about understanding how we can make it competitive. So we play soccer tennis, and now there's a chance for them to win. There's a reason to win. Then we go into working on why you might take a touch across your body, and it's always relative to your positional profile or the moment that you're in, or a moment that you've identified from a game or from a training that you really wanted to improve. Now I'm going to put you in a position where that's a focus for us to work on. That focus is really about giving them more encouragement, more support for why. And I'll set things up and I will say to the player, why are we doing this? Why might we do this? Or I'm going to put this setup out here. How can we change this a little bit more? What can we do differently that you think is going to make you an even better player in the next 10 or 15 minutes? What's really going to challenge you to go above and beyond here? Is it the fact that you need to check over 5 yards instead of just over 1 yard because it's easy to take a lazy step as opposed to an actual sprint for 3, 4, 5 steps that's going to create the separation that you want to see during a game? So it's a constant challenge of why for the player. Coaching is really tough in a one-on-one environment because it's really easy to correct or offer advice or coaching or comment on every single thing that a player does because it's just you two looking at them, working on them. And so I use timers or I use a ball count. I have, for example, 10 soccer balls. Take 10 balls and the coaching within it is we'll play 5 and then we'll talk about the 5. Then we'll play another 5. And so we go through 5 balls and then the conversation is, what did you think? Where did you do the best? And not, oh, the 3rd ball was the best ball, but what was the trend? Again, going back to that conversation we have as a team and the conversation with parents, what was the trend? Was the ball too far from you every time on average? Was it too close to you? Was it good every time? What made it good? What made it good that you felt good when you struck the ball? Okay, now we go into the next 5. And then we do that as opposed to me saying, good, nice, yeah, well done. Or maybe next time do this, maybe next time do that. Can you do this? Can you do that? Now again, I'm bombarding this player with information that's so unnecessary. And I call it speed training in terms of them getting 5 balls and they get instant feedback. Again, they already know what they've done right and what they've done wrong, and I'm encouraging them to use their voice around it. But then they can not only tell me, but they can identify what they might need to do. And if you read Dan Abrahams and listen to Dan Abrahams a lot, he talks about how you can't control the environment, but you can control how you react to the environment to an extent. I play golf and I get really mad sometimes and I get really happy a lot of the time and I don't know how to control between the two. And I know that players will be very similar. I was very similar as a player too. It gets frustrating. But identifying that I took a good touch because, I took a bad touch because we took 10 balls last week, and out of those, I figured that I could take a better touch if I did this. So now they can begin to help shape themselves in their behavior, in the repetitions, and then control what they're experiencing within a training and game environment where they might not get the ball again for another couple of minutes, but when they do, they've got the mindset that says, I know I need to work on it in this way. I need to work on it in that way. And that, to me, is the true value of empowering a player in a one-on-one training session. It's not about giving them a training exercise to get a better touch or to take a better touch and pass or to score in the top corner from a free kick. That's sort of the fun stuff that we do as well. But it's about empowering them to question why. Not only why the environment and the team and the coach perhaps, but then also empowering them to question why they've done what they've done in those moments. Why are they doing this? Why are they doing that? Is it in the mindset? Is it in their positioning? What is it? And help them understand. So as I said, I use Instagram and YouTube and I do the same thing to give them this empowerment. Of course, I film on my phone and my GoPro, and I've got some spoofy outtakes where a kid falls over or they get hit with a ball. And that's funny stuff that I send to them because it's important for them to see that not everything is perfect. And I try not to make all of the videos perfect and film over and over again until we get a good repetition. But I use those as good examples, and then I'll show them what we could have done better. And I'll use it live in the session too and say, this was your run. Tell me about that. Tell me about how you might change that. Why might you change it? Are you happy with that run? Okay, if you are happy with it and I don't think it's very good, then I'm going to use that time over the next 5 balls to say, did your run change? Was it better? Could it have improved in certain ways? So it's, again, it's always empowering the individual. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot for me to not just be the quote unquote professional coach and say, this is what you need to do every time and this is how you're going to get better, because the game doesn't work like that. I don't believe, and players don't work like that. But giving them the opportunity to understand why and then begin to question it for themselves. I always give them homework. Homework to me is really important, that You spend an hour with me, 2 hours with me. Maybe you have a couple practices a week and maybe a game on the weekend. And as we get into a real soccer season, kid might be playing 6 or 7 hours a week, and it's good and it's more than most, but it's not enough. And so I have several players who have started getting together and going out to one of the soccer fields and just playing. So I ask them, what you do? What do you guys do when you go out there? You know, you go and play, you go and have a kick around. What do you do? And, you know, they take penalties at each other and they try and play crossbar challenge and things like that. And so I say, do you want me to give you an activity? Do you want me to give you a game that you guys can play, the three or four of you, a game that you can play? And they say yes or they say no, and they take it and they do it or they don't do it. But importantly, they are out there playing. And then I think back to my youth and a lot of European youth where we played all the time, and maybe even old school here in the US too, that the culture of play was there and it's not there so much anymore. So if I'm empowering these players to go and have a good time and go and meet at the park because they're confident, most of the kids will get to the practice on their own. They'll ride their bike, take the bus to come and train with me. It's amazing. So they're empowered already. Now they know they can go and meet somebody else at the field and go and play. And we're starting to develop this culture of play for these players. They're being empowered. They're given the opportunity to work on themselves, to challenge themselves, and to begin to relate the real game that they do into everything that they do on the field when they're playing with me or whether they're playing with their friends. So we're just building this culture of soccer over and over again. So you might get the vibe from me that player power, player empowerment is some of the best things that you can do, regardless of your game model, regardless of how you are structuring your practices or your one-on-one trainings or anything like that. But the more these players feel empowered, the more confident they're going to be. The more confident they're going to be in their own performances, in approaching their coach and asking questions, or supporting and loving on their teammates, because they are that, they are a team, as opposed to taking what I would kind of consider an easy way out of saying bad things or ignoring that person because they see them as a weak person. So really helping these players to just feel the game a little bit more. And I think that as I walk away from teams, and I've recently left the club that I was at due to, mutual consent, but the players then felt empowered to communicate with the organization and ask why they decided to make the coaching change that they did, ask them why they weren't asked about their opinion in why they might change the coach that was working with them. And whilst that was never my intention to create an army of people that supported me all along, it's really made such a difference to have these players feel empowered to ask this question. And I think that to me was just a perfect summary from all of the work that I've done with those individuals to give them the confidence and to put them in a position where they feel empowered and they have a voice to say, okay, I'm not happy with the decision that's been made around us. And my parting conversation with them is, look, things like that happen and changes are made all the time. And as a soccer player, you may end up in an organization or you may go to a college where you've been recruited and then the head coach changes. So change is inevitable. It's how you deal with that. And I think they're still going to work at it. They're still going to keep going. And I really hope that the foundation that I've given them and the foundation that I've shared with you now, you can take to your teams and to your players and really start empowering them to become not only great soccer players, great teammates, but then also great people too. There's always more coming from me and from Heads and Volleys. I have a book coming out real soon, and it's 1v1s outside of the box. And it's about a realistic game-based approach to taking an isolated 1v1 and moving that into small-sided games and the structure that it takes to have a successful practice around that. Really looking into developing your game model, really looking at positional profiles, really understanding what the practice that you're setting up and kind of building on the previous episode with Ben Bell in terms of the constraints-led approach and the environment that you're creating for your players. So look out for that coming soon. It's in a final draft right now. I'm really excited to share that with you. You can always connect with me at Lead on Soccer on YouTube and Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and all those good places too. So more coming real soon.